Hobby Night in Canada. Tonight I am joined by
Ward,
Mike,
and Dan.
And we're missing our wonderful usual intro of Tom. So hopefully he's feeling better.
Yeah, the blessings of Nurgle are plentiful in his household, so he continues to not be among us.
Ooh, let's leave it at that. Anyways, for tonight we have sort of a mishmash of topics we're going to talk about. We've got the tournament season sort of coming up, so there's a lot of stuff about that we're going to talk about and things and changes. But I guess first we should talk about what have you been doing this week. Mike, what have you been up to?
Actually, I've been dug out all my drop zone stuff. I'm starting to paint it up again and try to get everything 100% done instead of 65.
What's sitting beside you right now?
A big fat box of resistance. It's so good.
So are you sure you're going to actually manage to make it through that 60%
I'm not allowed
stuff?
To touch this until I finish off the stuff in my UC.
That's a lie. That's built.
It is built and fully magnetized.
Primed. It's not primed and it's not painted.
Built and fully magnetized. That's not even... Yeah, we'll let you go with that one for now. But I'd be shocked if there wasn't one model that was painted up by next week.
Shut up, Steve.
Dan, what have you been working on?
The last couple of days, I actually spent a few hours building and converting and magnetizing up some more BattleTech stuff. So,
what is happening?
Oh, I got
is it 1994?
I got.
You mean like 1986, possibly?
Sure, yeah, even that. Like, you guys are getting stuff shipped to you, like Ward right now. What are you looking at?
I got a baggie of BattleTech, which is awesome. So
it's a baggie that kind of looks like drugs.
It's
the same sort of color. It looks like that could be like, I don't know.
Crystal? Crystallized crack rock in the shape of
BattleTech
mechs.
If only they were like a light blue.
Yeah, you get some ice. I think someone here watched Breaking Bad once, so we'll call it ice.
Where's Alex? She'll know.
Yeah, exactly. So you've been working on BattleTech. Anything else?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I finally finished, like, I built the final door for my display cabinet because I got lazy after building so much IKEA furniture. I, like, didn't quite finish building my display cabinet for an extended period of time. It's a little bit more robust than some of the other ones.
Oh, okay.
They're a little bit of a pain in the ass to assemble, but no, it's pretty good. I finally got that all set up, and
nice.
I still need to, I think I'm going to buy even more shelves for it.
Good.
Because as I... you know, unpacked all my stuff, it's just like, holy crap, I own so much stuff. Like, because
yeah, I know how that goes.
I had several game systems for the stuff that wasn't in my cabinets before.
Yeah.
And now I want them all on display, so that's a problem. But yeah, so building BattleTech, got my display stuff all up and running again. And yeah, I picked up some more airbrush paints for painting my BattleTech stuff. And hopefully I'll have some not quite as speed painted battle mechs done in the next little while.
Well, those ones that you did before, right? They were the poor quality. I don't want to say poor.
They were the
quality.
Starter set models.
Starter set.
They're like the single
compared
piece.
To the,
single
oh, I thought
piece
you were
plastic.
Talking about his painting.
Well, they were pretty quick. They were not Dan's. Let's say they weren't Golden Demon winners, but
I did paint 25 of them in like two sittings. So that's pretty awesome.
Which color scheme are you going for again?
These new ones. The previous ones were just generic greens, so they can kind of just be generic models, right? Like they didn't really have a specific house or affiliation in mind, where the stuff I'm doing like now, like the non-starter set models, I'm going to be doing them up as mercenaries of the Wolf's Dragoons color scheme. So the like dark red, a little bit of black, and some of the scout mechs might be like reverse, so it's like black with a bit of red instead of primarily red. But yeah, it should be really cool.
I don't know what that looks like.
They're red.
Black is a really dark color.
You know black very well.
He's an expert at it, didn't
you?
Know? You, my wife knows you're an expert at black.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, there will be a slightly weathered...
sounded weirdly sexual.
there'll be a slightly weathered, like, medium to dark red, and their symbol is, I don't know, it's kind of like the Space Wolfish symbol. They're Wolf's Dragoons, so it's a wolf head cartoon logo thing.
I'm imagining red space wolves now, so that's
more cartoony,
insane.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Ward, what have you been working on? I know you've been working on something that I'm excited about.
I've been working on Imperial Fists.
Yay!
And thanks to Dan, the process is taking a little bit longer than anticipated. Because I'm like,
what? How? How's this my fault?
You have got to be the slowest painter that I know. You cannot blame Dan for that.
I can, because because I painted the test helmet, right? And I sent it to a few of you.
Oh, I sent you some painting tutorials for OSL Space Marine lenses.
Yeah.
What the? Why would you do that? To ruin his life, clearly.
So now I'm trying that and trying to do chips and...
Don't do chips on the helmet, man.
What? What?
No, because they're not heavy wearing surfaces. Like, what is the guy doing running into walls all day?
What if he just fell down?
Banging his head against the wall.
You want to have the chips, the grill.
Leave the helmet, I think, entirely alone.
I'll show you this picture and then you'll be like, okay, chips on the helmet are awesome. No,
it's a really well-painted head.
Yes. 45 minutes for helmet.
So
when are you gonna get a damn model done, dude?
Eventually.
Oh my god. What?
Well, Steve,
the contest is over.
Didn't he promise you that he was gonna do one model?
A month ago.
I think that promise is broken, Ward.
I know.
I think punishment is in order here right now.
Punishment?
I think we should take the Space Marine head and hit it with a hammer.
Oh.
Be very satisfying to watch Wars.
I would cry.
All those perfect mold lines smashed.
Yeah, all those mold lines are gone. And then I'm also painting up some Dystopian Wars terrain.
Oh, for
really? What exactly?
I was working on the big warehouses.
Oh, okay.
So I've got kind of like a red brick finish, and then like a dark green to almost like teal like roof style. And then I'm doing a lot of the accents with like a dark gray around the sides. So
cool.
I'll send you some pictures.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
So I'm working on a little bit of that. Seeing if I can get some done for terrain for upcoming events, but I'm not.
I think you should get Imperial Fist done for an upcoming.
I know that's what you're most excited about. So
I don't give a shit about terrain. I saw you painting a bastion. Is that right? Is that really old?
Those are old.
Oh, it might have been a really, really old picture from, like, Last Onslaught.
Oh.
Or preview, maybe the one before that. Who knows?
No, I think it was just before Last Onslaught. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get these done. And then,
never did.
So it's only 6 months
old. The base color is all done on all of them, but...
you should just use it. That's good enough.
It is good enough.
I've been working on a Wave Serpent and another 3, because I want more.
You clearly did not have enough Eldar, so...
Yeah. I actually had to move stuff around. I ran out of space.
Your display cabinet that is all Eldar is looking kind of full.
Yeah, so I had to move the Battlefleet Gothic Eldar up to the top. They're now sitting on the very top of the display cabinet. And I actually have some room on the middle shelf now. There's some space there. But there are 3 more Wave Serpents upstairs. So that'll take up that space pretty quick. I did that. I also... assembled the Tyrant Guard for my Swarmlord.
Nice.
So that should be good. I have a Tyranid army with no troops.
It's cool. That's allowed now.
Yeah.
You can do that.
I need to do a Forge World order for the Forge World Rippers because the regular Rippers look like balls. There's like 3 on a base and they're kind of boring. But the Forge World ones.
There's like
awesome.
Hundreds of them on a base.
They actually look like a swarm instead of just crap.
How much are they going for now?
They're actually pretty reasonable. You can get 9 for 40 pounds, I want to say. I only need 6, though. So I'm probably going to buy the 9. And when you're talking about that's 3 troop units that are actually pretty decent with Deep Strike, that's not terrible. And they're actually a decent sculpt. Like,
yeah, they're actually insanely detailed. Those Forge World Ripper Swarms are really cool.
There's 3 different sculpts. That's the thing, too. You get the repeat, but you do get... you do get 3 different ones, so that's kind of cool. So I have to buy that. That's the other thing, I guess, that I need to do this week.
Oh, look, Dan, nice. Forge World Order is going in.
Yeah.
Perfect. You should jump on that.
I also need 2 Malanthropes with it, so I will get free shipping automatically. So do you need anything?
I might have to tack a squad of Gulliver back on there, because they've been out for a while.
Oh,
and I don't own them.
Am I making you spend money, Dan?
I can't.
Is Vulcan out yet, too? Can we just bring this
buy
right,
all
through right through the roof?
My own personal like Forge World like account has like a $500... like order in the shit sitting in the shopping cart right now, so like I can't go I can't get it all.
Logging in, you're just like
the temptation to hit checkout is slightly diminished because I still haven't got my new credit cards yet. So
I had a moment of things aren't so bad in my Forge World life. There's some blog that I was looking at, like I can't remember, something with Craft World, was an Eldar thing. Dude had 3 Phantom Titans and 9 Revenants. He also had 20 flyers, and he was getting it commissioned up to do, I don't even know why. I started going through it, and it was just like, things are okay. My life is all right.
Wow. I feel better about my land choices.
And 9 revenants. I can't even imagine.
Second mortgage on the house.
For sure. Dude was rich. He had 20 flyers getting painted, and only 4 of them were Crimson Hunters and...
So the rest were resin.
The rest were resin, and I think like 10 of them Phoenixes were vampire and stuff? Bombers. Oh, and my God. That.
So that's what, like, okay. 5,000 points with the fighters or something like that?
Yeah, he had 20 flyers on the go.
Like, perfect. You can play Aeronautica Imperialis, like, big scale.
So I think from what I was getting from his blog is I think he was trying to recreate, like, Epic. Like, the Epic war host in 40K scale.
Oh, wow.
That was his idea. Because wow. He had 16 wave serpents getting painted by a commission painter.
Hmm.
So I think that was his idea. I don't know who he's going to play against.
John.
But he was saying that he has over 2,000 infantry models of Eldar.
2,000 models.
Infantry models.
Not points. 2,000 models.
And that's not including the vehicles.
Or the, like, 12 Titans.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah, so okay. We're okay. We're doing just fine, guys.
It helps to put things in perspective a little bit.
Just talk to my wife for me.
I'll try and find that blog so we can link to it. Because the dude has some incredible stuff. Like, it was nicely painted and very well done.
But I thought you said it was commission painted, though.
Some of it was.
Okay.
Because no human being could do that in a reasonable time frame. Like, he had 100 jet bikes. Just because they were all painted.
He can.
100 jet bikes.
This is sounding like Steve Brule's imaginary brother.
He's got like 100 jetpacks. Went to the Great Wall of China, some swimming balls. If anybody hasn't seen Steve Brule, you should Google it and don't judge us. So anyways, I think that covers what we've been working on. The next thing we should talk about is a segment we're going to call Shut Up and Take My Money. If anybody's seen the Fry gif or meme, this is what we're going after, and you know what? I'm going to start with this one, because I can't shut up about the leaked pictures. I want to spend all of my dollars on Dark Eldar.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about some, like, Reddit or something there for a second.
Leaked pictures, yeah. The fappening. No. The Void Raven Bomber. I was excited about a new Dark Eldar Codex, because I think the rule set's been getting really good for 40K lately, and I think the releases have been nice and tight for the way they've done rule sets, but the models for this are looking awesome. Even Skrillex Homunculus is pretty cool. So that's what I'm going to spend all my money on, including, I think, maybe a limited edition codex. It looks like it's $250 US.
It's going to take the plunge. One yet. Take the plunge.
So that's a $300 release for one model and a codex.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I like where this is going. This is
totally reasonable. So that's a lot of money that they're going to take from me, and I think that I'm okay with that.
That seems very appropriate for the segment.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Or
shut up and take my money. The thing that I'm most interested in right now is Spartan Games' new system, Planetfall. I'm going to play it cautious, however, for them to take my money.
So wait, before we go any further. Planetfall is what?
Planetfall is their new system where it's based on their Firestormer model game system. When Planetfall is the assault phase of a planet, when they're actually doing the invasion tactic.
So it's a lot like the Dystopian Wars, what's it called, where they have the actual miniatures. Like the
Dystopian
scale.
Legions?
It's 10 millimeter. It's 10.
Oh, so they're taking on Drop Zone.
Yes,
yeah,
there you go.
It'd be similar to Drop Zone. So, and they're doing a lot of, the initial wave also has Alliance fleets already built in.
Okay.
The box set has the Dendrenzi and the...
No, it's not the Dendrenzi. I'm pretty sure it's Directorate and Aquin.
Directorate and Aquin. Okay, ooh, yeah, that's
pretty. I'm pretty sure.
So you're going to get Aquin Infantry?
Yeah.
Have they released pictures of it yet?
I think they have. I haven't looked at it that closely. I'm pretty sure they do.
I'm interested to see what the Squid's Infantry look like. Are they in, like,
the Aquin mechs? Tanks remind me of...
Fishbowl on Wheels?
No, why can't I think of it?
I have no
Star
idea.
Wars Episode 1, the battle droid tanks, but...
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, where they have, like, the energy sphere
thing. Yeah, and they've got the big...
The shovel nose.
What?
The kind of a shovel nose.
Half between a tau hammerhead and a fishbowl.
There you go. They look really interesting. My only... The reason that I'm not throwing money at it right now is that none of the armies that are in the box set... are what I play. So I'm going to be somewhat cautious. Spartan
Games. Hardly shut up and take my money.
Yeah, really.
I'm committed.
I'm excited about it, though. I can't wait.
All right, we'll let you go on this one.
And the other, what was I going to say? Cool thing about this is, like I said, like the Alliance fleet's already built in. I've seen some initial sculpts of the Ceruleans, and they're doing light and heavy infantry automatically right out of the gate, which I'm really excited for.
Cool. Mike.
Me. Well, Ward has told me I can only pick one thing.
Only one. There can be only one.
Actually, I'm going to override Ward, because Ward didn't have something that he's actually excited to pay money for. He's holding off on it, which is hardly shut up and take my money. So, Mike, make up for it.
All right. Okay, I got two. My first one, of course, is going to be the Star Wars Armada. I want that really bad. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm going to buy two starters right out the gate. Just
so everybody is talking about Armada right now.
It looks so sexy. I just, yeah. And it's the scale I always wanted to play it at, to be honest.
The Battlefield Gothic kind of
scale. Yes, absolutely. That's been, and everything looks really hot and interesting in the way they're doing it. So, yes, I can't wait to get my hands on it. And the other thing is, of course, the Resistance, now that I've actually played against them and seen the models, they are gorgeous.
You have just the starter
and
box?
I just have the starter box.
Yeah, so you got a lot more to buy. Yeah, that's got only 500 points they come with?
About that, yes.
Yeah, so you needed to triple that.
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
You'll be fine.
Yeah, so that's the other half of my money's gone already, yeah.
Good, I like this. I actually want to play against them. I haven't played them yet.
They're really resilient. They're really good. You got to try them.
They're not super high armor, but a lot of hit points.
Yeah, exactly. And when I played against them, I got the huge burn for Drop Zone all over again.
That's good, because every time I play Drop Zone, I get super excited about it, and then I just don't paint it. So that's good.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Yeah. Steve has to paint his stuff. See, look, he's trying to override me now, but he can't because his stuff isn't painted. He's going to paint it now, right?
Steve, you brought this on yourself. You told him he could talk about two things.
I know. I did bring it on myself, but I am excited about it. The thing is, I'm kind of with Dan. 10 mil is a little tough to get excited about for the painting.
Suck it up.
I know. And plus, I have wave serpents to paint, though, and I love painting red on flat surfaces. There's some smooth curves occasionally.
Very slight curvature, it's true.
Dan, what are you excited about?
For me, the shut up and take my money is, I think for the most part, Battle Foam. Because during the course of moving, I realized how far behind I've been lagging in my purchasing of transport for my armies.
Okay, you do know my system, right? I don't buy cases. I just cut up existing ones until there's nothing left and then don't use them anymore. I think it's an economical system.
And you also bought a house, so you don't have the prospect of moving again in the next couple of years. I have to worry about that. So
that's true.
So yeah, like I haven't picked up a Battle Foam case in a very long time, and I have picked up a bunch of games like Attack Wing and X-Wing, where games where none of the foam that I have is remotely the right size and shape for the models.
Yeah.
So rather than, again, cutting up and destroying all my existing cases, of which I don't have nearly enough anymore, I actually have to finally take the plunge and get a custom Battle Foam case for my X-Wing. And the cool thing about it is I spent some time in the custom tray creator flash tool that they have, which is really shitty and needs to get redone as a side note. But
as a software developer, I'm cringing.
Yeah, if there was a button to, like, duplicate existing, like, items that you're dragging around on the map rather than having to go through the drop-down menus every time and, like, hold the button to slowly make them spin for, like, 8,000 seconds rather than just... there's so many UI things that drive me crazy, and I spend a lot of time on the Battle Foam tray creator tool, so I'm very familiar with its shortcomings. But yeah, so I think I found a way to get everything I own, including the Corellian Corvette and the transport, into a Pac 432 case.
That's pretty cool.
So they now have like vertically loading Pac
432. But what happens when you buy Scum and Villainy?
That'll have to be separate. But on the bright side, I don't even know what shape those ships are in. So I couldn't do custom trays if I wanted to. But like the insane amount of stuff that I own all fits into one case. And if I have to spend like $40 on like one or two extra trays down the road to fit an entire other faction, that's not so bad. And if I'm lucky, they might fit on one tray, so that'd be like $18.
So I might have to jump in on that shut up and take my money thing because I need a case to get my stuff to Vegas.
Oh, yeah, you want a good one when you travel, too. You don't want a skimped skeeve or use a cut one because...
I did last time and I had nothing but broken shit.
Did you have any broken models?
Actually, when I got there, I had nothing that was broken, which was shocking. But on the way home, I could open up my stuff and I had like 4 Wraithguard that didn't have arms anymore, crest broken off. Like, it was bad.
Yeah, the Battle Foam is pretty awesome stuff. A lot of it is specifically designed to be the correct size to be taken on carry-on.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to check it and get it crushed and have like a fat guy sit on it.
Or like what happens to me, they wonder what the hell is in your case and make you open it in the line going through to figure out that your wave serpents are not in fact bombs with weird spikes on the end of them. Like, oh, these aren't guns or knives.
Yeah,
or
if you
things.
Can open the case and show them the models yourself and explain our nerdy pastime versus having some random TSA officer just rifling through your stuff. Yeah, it's preferable to have it in carry-on.
I will say, though, it is really weird having to open that up in front of a line of hundreds of people in the Vegas airport. That's always exciting.
Don't judge me!
Yeah, it's a little weird.
I'm sure Vegas, though, has seen it enough times now. They're just like, oh, yeah, that's... just let them through.
Yeah, for sure. So, I think that covers Shut Up and Take My Money. We're going to talk a lot more about Dark Eldar next week, because I'm going to make you guys...
It's not even an option, apparently.
There's no option. I guess it's not next week. It's 2 weeks. Potentially out in 2 weeks. Well, Mike, you got some Dark Elder, but you're not... we'll get you back playing 40K. I think it's going to happen.
I bet it makes me paint white again.
That's fine. Just take a book out of our Patriot Awards book and just spray paint it. You'll be done. Just skull white.
I'm not going to go that low. I'll never go that low. Hey, Ward. Hey.
Just white primer, do some purple areas on it. I mean,
it's pretty done. Finished.
Right.
And that is your color scheme too, for the most part. So,
we're kidding.
I don't even know what to say.
Okay, so we'll talk about that big release next time. But there was another big release that we need to talk about. That's kind of changed another game system we haven't played much around here in a long time, and that would be the Nagash book. It kind of blindsided everybody, I think, in the fantasy world. Didn't really entirely see it coming.
And interestingly enough, Harry, as always, on the forums, he sees everything coming, drops those subtle hints like a year in advance.
He mentions something
about
the end
times. And they're
bang on. He mentioned something about the end times like years ago, and it was like in passing.
And it's absolutely spot on. That guy, I don't know who the hell he is or who he's friends with.
Yeah.
But that dude.
He knows what's going on. But anyways, review of the actual book. So I don't personally own it yet because it's $100 and it's painful. But you brought it over, Dan. What do you think? Let's start with you, because you've actually managed to read through, I think, most of it, and then Ward's got the second most.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read the entire thing cover to cover, but everything that I've seen in the books, for the most part, I've liked so far. I mean, it maintains the similar format to the 40K 7th edition. So you have book one and book two. Book one is like 300 pages of fluff and artwork, and maps and descriptions of the regiments in these like big battles that take place in the campaign.
So the book one is entirely fluff. There's no rules in it, and it's as thick, almost as I would say it's thicker than the rule book easily for 40K. It's huge, and I mean it's full color the whole way through.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
Glorious artwork. Tons of it is like literally edge to edge, and it looks like about 295-ish pages.
Yeah, and it's bound nicely, like it's not like the old GW books that fell apart, I think. We'll find out in 5 years if you keep opening it. But it looks awesome. It's in the new style, the very sort of white, it's almost like I would liken it a
high
lot
contrast,
to like
high contrast.
High contrast. I think it looks a lot like Apple in a lot of ways. Like that sort of like
I can
simple,
see
clean lines.
Kind of minimalist a little bit. Yeah.
On the cover, yeah. And I think they're going that way with some of their... Like, you would compare it to, like, the Vampire Counts or Tomb King's cover.
It looks a lot
totally
more like
different.
The 40K books. It looks a lot more like the 7th edition rule books than the previous fantasy books.
Yeah, it's not cartoony like your traditional fantasy book, I guess you could say.
I think it looks awesome. It's a book you could actually put on a coffee table and people be like, what the hell is that? If they didn't see Warhammer, because Warhammer's pretty popular and most people know what it is, they'd be like, that's really interesting.
They're like, why is that big skull with glowing eyes on your?
It's a nice
table?
Piece of art. I actually really like it. And the book the whole way through. I guess we shouldn't get into the spoilers because some people might be actually quite interested in it.
Yeah,
but things change.
It's like full on Game of Thrones. Like everyone is getting murdered left, right, and center. Like I'm terrified for what's going to happen in subsequent books because like they're basically like wiping countries off the map almost in this. Like,
yeah, Talaya.
Although, yeah, it is, to be fair, mostly Talaya. Spoiler. So, like, I have the Dogs of War.
No one
army,
plays Dogs of War outside of Dan. Dan is the only player on the planet that plays Dogs of War that will care.
Yeah, but the dirty Skaven bastards have basically torn down Talaya. So, perfect.
So, Ward, what do you think of the fluff book, we'll call it?
I'm really liking it. I've made my way in the digital version. So I
Quick question, was it a little cheaper?
How much was yours?
The one I bought was $100 less the Roy Thunderground discount. So
I think it was $10 cheaper. I think I spent $90.
Yay!
So a little bit cheaper. So, but yeah, I've got the digital copy again. I can blow up all the pictures.
And a lot of them are definitely worth having those really high res images. Like, a lot of them would make like really cool, like, you know, wallpapers or like a phone background or something. Yep.
Exactly.
Like, there's lots of really, really impressive new artwork in there. Like, I was expecting it to be a lot more rehashed, but there's a lot of stuff I've never seen before.
They
needed to do that, though.
They've got a lot of cool artwork, for sure. Not just the cover, but, like, inside.
There's more than just the cover
more
page.
More than just the cover. Pro tip.
The cover's what's going to sell this thing in a lot of ways. Like, people are interested in it, and the hype's getting, like, the hype is big around this one. But the actual cover looks awesome, and that's, I think, one of the big things. It sort of looks like a rebranding.
I also like how they've advanced the storyline, like, right away. As soon as I started reading, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So it's a pretty good read. I'd highly recommend it if you like the Warhammer universe.
Just to be clear now, though, this is almost a must buy now, isn't it? Because it is changes rules for the whole system.
Well, I guess we should move on to talking about the fluff book. I think would you guys say the fluff book alone is worth it?
I'd say the fluff book by itself would be, if it was like a $50 or $60 hardcover, it would be probably worth picking up if you're a big fantasy fan. Like, there's tons of content in there, tons of new stories. A lot of the old characters are back in one form or another. Like, there's tons in there to keep you entertained. I could see a lot of people buying that book, even if there were no rules. That would be easily probably worth like a $60 purchase by itself.
Yeah, it's almost like an interesting Black Library kind of book with just full color plates.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you also get a army book. Well, I don't know if you want to call it an army book. I guess let's maybe a supplement.
Yeah, it's
an expansion.
Nagash Book 2. It's very similar to like one of the expansion books from 40K. So like your like Tau Pure Tide army or whatever. What's his name?
The Farsight Enclaves.
Farsight, that's the one. Yeah, so similar to one of those supplements where it's the size of a codex. It has, you know, 10 or 12 pages with the rules in it. Again, more fluff, more scenarios. It's very similar to those supplements.
This does not follow one faction specifically at all.
This affects the entire Warhammer game.
And it also, so the first thing that changes that I, in my opinion, is the biggest deal is the force organization chart, where you get to choose 50% lords, 50% heroes, and then your typical 50% core.
Minimum, or 25%
minimum core, 25, yeah. Sorry, and max 50 special and 25 rare.
Yeah.
The reason I think that is unbelievably big is it brings Hero Hammer back, which may or may not be a good thing for competitive play, but it's a very good thing for your wallet. Fantasy has been the most expensive game GW produces, which is kind of odd because I wouldn't say it's their second class game, but it is their second bestseller. And the reason it's been, I think, on the downswing is because to be competitive in fantasy, you needed regiments of 50, 100 models. And that's just totally insane.
Yeah, when you're buying them 10 models per box for like $40 a box.
Let's talk about witches.
That's out of control.
Dark Eldar witches are not $40 a box.
Yeah, aren't they 70?
They're 70, and you probably want to have 40 witches minimum pushing a cauldron.
Yeah, with horde formations being what they are, like these units of 30, 40, 50 guys stacking multiple buffs on a single unit, there's a huge incentive to play that style of game. And if you're looking at like $600 for a single unit,
you're not.
That's crazy.
That's an Xbox for a unit. Like, you can get an Xbox One almost for that price.
No, you can, and get a couple games probably
exactly.
For that price.
Yep.
Yeah, by the time you get a couple games controllers, you're fine. And I mean, that is, I think, in my mind, the barrier to entry. Like, if you
Absolutely.
Think, I can buy a brand new game console, or I can buy one unit, excluding rules, paints, anything else, that's not a game for everyone.
Yeah, because that's the other side of it as well is, you know, if you have all these units of 50, 60 models running around, you got to paint those bastards.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a lot of paint and a lot of time. And if you don't have the time to paint that, then you're starting to look maybe, oh, I want to play in a tournament. It's commission painting time. And holy crap, that just went through the roof, like even more. But the reason I like this is you can play, if you're playing a 2,500 point game, you can play 1,250 of Lords and Heroes, and that means monsters. So
there, there also is a requirement, though, too, where you have to have a minimum of 3 units.
Yeah, I like that. I think that that's fair. I mean, you can. So that means you can take Nagash, some Mortarks, and a unit of Chariots, and you're good to go, kind of thing. But the reason I like this is, again, the cost. But on top of that, let's talk about Nagash. He's the main guy. He's on the front of the book. Let's talk about his rules.
And he does have the coolest hat. Maybe not the coolest. He has the biggest hat.
He doesn't have as ridiculous of a Pope hat as he used to have. This one is still pretty ridiculous, but it looks a little intimidating. That's a lot of bones in his hat.
Yeah, and he has, like, the weirdest hair I've ever seen.
Hair? Also, do you want to call that hair? Check it out.
He's got
hair?
He's got, like, 4 little strands of, like, super long hair dangling from underneath his helmet.
I don't think that's hair. I think those... Let's call those straps of leather or something.
They're attached to the hat.
If I buy that model, that's like the first thing I'm doing is clipping off those weird little things. I don't know what they are, so they need to go.
The one that bothers me about his model. So we talked about his model a little bit. I think it's amazing. I would clip off his bone goatee. I think it's dumb as shit.
No way.
You like the bone goatee?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Look at King Tut. Like,
oh yeah, all these Egyptian right? guys
yeah,
had the...
exactly.
The,
so that's fitting the theme. It's tying in.
It's a spinal column.
Whatever.
On his chin.
I would if I had that, I would stab people with it. It's like unicorns. He's a reverse unicorn.
I don't even understand. Reverse?
I don't know. Where is that? I don't know.
That also sounds vaguely sexual.
No, maybe he's a very accommodating lover.
Okay. So what the hell were we talking about? Anyways, force organization chart.
Change.
I think it's amazing. I think it's great. What do you think, Ward?
I think it could usher in the new edition of Warhammer. There's been talks about it coming out next year. This could be the precursor to what is going to change. That could be the new force organization, and this is just
I'd be shocked if they came out with a new edition 6 months from now that changes the force org chart back to what it used to be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't
think
they're going to invalidate a brand new $100 expansion, like, just a few months later. I think...
They have to be aware of their sales figures, too, that, like, yeah. they're not getting new customers, because, again, you're looking at $1,000 for an army minimum.
But...
Absolutely minimum.
This is quite a bit of a change, going to Hero Hammer type thing. Is this going to unbalance everything that they've done and
So when you think of your golden days of fantasy, what do you think of, Dan?
Really interesting question. Part of me wants to say 5th edition, because that's the last time the Dogs of War had a legitimate army book.
Okay, was 5th edition, would you call that Hero Hammer?
5th edition was still pretty crazy.
I would agree.
Like, 6th edition was very much like 3rd edition 40K.
Toned down.
Where they stripped it way down to the bare bones. They simplified things. You know, you don't have, like, separate levels for the altitudes of your flyers. You don't have to stop and play fucking Magic the Gathering every turn.
Yeah, for the like, magic phase. Mike, what do you think? What was your favorite edition of fantasy? You didn't start till later.
I didn't start till really late. That was last edition.
You started in 7th?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's right. Or when did you start playing fantasy?
I played a little bit of 4th, but 5th was the main box set that I bought.
So I still have all the cards. They're sitting on my shelf right there.
Oh, yeah,
4th.
That was a horrible game system.
Wait, you know what? I kind of lied. I do have that one book. That was the entire codex for all the races.
Oh, Ravening Hordes.
Yes.
That little tiny paper thing. That was the retconning
for
Fifth.
So I kind of did play it then, but that was it and I stopped.
I shouldn't say it was retconning. That was when they were like, okay, all these army books are stupid. Let's
We completely rewrote the entire game so that none of the old army books work anymore. We need to release something so people can play.
Released a pamphlet. That made no sense.
Yeah,
actually a book, though.
It was awesome.
No, I think you got it wrong. I'll have to look.
Or wait, in a previous edition, was Ravening Hordes a full-on codex?
No. It was just...
It had pygmies
kind of like
in it. It had slam in
it. It tweaked some of your rules and your existing...
Did you say it had pygmies in it?
Yep.
Okay, I might be thinking of...
Ravening Hordes in 6th edition may have been riffing on a previous Ravening Hordes that was a full-on, like, army book.
Yeah, Ravening Hordes, I think...
Because it was like a 20-page pamphlet.
It was.
In
6th 20 pages, there was a goblin on the cover.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
And each army list had like 2 pages of rules.
Yeah, exactly.
That's... Okay, so
even Chaos Sorcerers.
So when I think of my favorite edition of fantasy, I think Hero Hammer 4th Ed, Crazy Gray Seers, Warlords with Fel Blades that were more insane than anything before, Doom Wheels before they went away and then came back. Like, that's my idea of the Vermin Lord, the model that still is from 4th Ed because he was a boss.
I still think he's one of the better models in terms of, like, this gaming range.
The points and the
pose staff is a little bit tragic, but the actual detail, the sculpt itself is awesome.
For 4th Ed, I like it.
It was so ahead of its time.
Considering what they've done now with Nagash, but we'll talk about that later. You look at old Nagash, new Nagash, and
old Nagash what they could was do with, actually a joke. And like, I was going to say he's a joke, sarcastically, but he was a real joke.
The other quick thing that I want to mention about like the book itself and how it's changed the game is it's also given all wizards a chance to use undead magic.
Yeah, so very much like the malefic demons from 40K, minus the miscast.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. It's not as punishing. Like, yes, you can cast malefic powers, but you shouldn't. This one you can do the summoning spam.
It's punishing in the way that you have to buy models to summon. That would be the hindrance. Okay. However, I have heard of a very unique way of somebody using this in their army. A gentleman down in Calgary is basically going to.
He's going to do an undead version of his own army.
He's going to basically summon up. He's playing high elves, and he's going to summon up ghostly dead high elves.
Yeah!
To defend you.
That's cool.
But they're going to be ghostly. They're not going to be like skeletons. They're going to be like ghostly.
So the same models in that like ethereal like color palette?
Yes, exactly.
I kind of like that. I'm not sure I feel about it yet.
I really like that.
I kind of like that, the idea of the high elves just pulling them back.
He's still staying really cohesive, right? Where it's like spirits of our ancestors are defending us, defending us.
Yeah, okay. It took me a second to get on board with that, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to have, like, Nagash in the army. It's a high elf army that just is going to happen to summon.
He'll just summon skeletal spearmen that are elf spearmen painted like ghosts.
I like that. I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah.
That's actually really cool. And I like that. I think you can utilize that kind of theme throughout most of the armies.
I'm going to summon some undead slaves because they're going to be better than the slaves that they once were.
Yeah, how did your guys die and get better? It shouldn't be a thing.
So we were talking about the four Zorg chart and we think it's generally good.
Yes,
I think it's good.
I don't have enough to say against it or nay, but it sounds interesting. I would like to try.
I think it gives you more options. I think in the one-off play, you're going to see more people use those lords and play with that. In a tournament we'll talk about that a little bit later. I don't think you're going to see huge changes necessarily.
Because there were plenty of armies before that didn't benefit from taking more characters. Mm-hmm. Like,
let's talk about the tournament changes in a second. Dan, what do you think about the Force Org in general?
I think
it's a good thing?
I think at the end of the day, it's not going to unbalance the game for the most part. It just gives you a lot more flexibility to use whatever parts of your collection you want. You still have your minimum core. It's not full-on 40k unbound by any stretch. It just gives you, if you want to take like a big Dragon Lord and you're playing a 1,200-point game, you're allowed to now.
And, yeah, exactly. I like that.
At the end of the day, a 100-point cannon will still shoot him in the face and kill him on turn one. So it's fair.
But you can, we're all agreed, you can get into the game a little bit cheaper with this four sword.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think that's the biggest thing. Because I still think fantasy is a great system. And I think that was the biggest problem.
Yeah, I've said it for a long time. It's a great system. I wish I could, you know, get into it a little bit more. And this is the first thing in a long time to really rekindle some of that old passion for the game.
I was getting kind of excited, yeah, with the book. I was like, oh. So, what do you mean you guys don't have the book? What do you mean you guys don't have the Nagash model? Damn it.
So flipping through the book, you get Nagash and his rules, but you also get a ton of other characters, and some of them are returns from wonderful years past.
Days long gone.
Like, I'm personally really excited about Neferata. I've always had Kalita in my Tomb Kings list, and she's the one that was killed by Neferata before she fled. She's now back. She's a Mortark. I'm excited about that. She's got a beautiful model, but...
Dan, are we excited for the same person?
Ark in the Black?
Yes! Yeah,
Ark in the Black.
Oh,
I was going to say, there's Krell, you've got Vlad, you've got Valton, you've got these new Morghast, Krom. I think Krom is sweet. That's another, what, 5th Ed model when the new Chaos Warriors were released?
Yeah. Oh, no, not 5th. That was... It was either 6th or 7th.
It was right after the new
Storm
Chaos
of, it was Storm of Chaos. It was Storm of
it
Chaos.
It was the new Chaos Plastic. Like, he looks like the old... Like the old plastic?
Yeah, stylistically, he's a bit of a throwback, but I think he was a 6th or 7th edition model.
So, The biggest one we should talk about, I'm trying to find him here because he's hiding, is Nagash's rules. He's, first of all, we should probably talk, how many points is he?
1,000!
1,000!
It's a nice even number, isn't it?
It's not over 1,000.
It's not over 9,000 either.
It's not over 9,000, no. His stat line is suitably badass. He's sevens pretty much across the board for everything you need to know. And other than that, it's sixes. And of course, leadership 10. So he's well above average. Seven wounds. Like, he's not going to die from a cannon shot, which is what I like.
4+, and 4+ ward save as well.
See, he's not... staying true to, like, the fantasy character, he's not got an insane armor save, and I like that.
Yeah, he doesn't have, like, a rerollable 1+ save or anything too crazy.
I really like that, the fact that he is killable. But I also really like the fact he's 7 wounds. Like, he's not going to take a cannonball and die on the first turn.
Yeah, a single
second
hit...
turn, maybe.
Single hit with turn, D6 maybe. Wounds won't do him.
But on top of that, he's got all the undead lores that he can get access to, so he can heal himself back pretty quick.
Yeah, 5 levels with 9 spells.
Yeah, so level 5, not only is going to be... I think the only person that has level 5 in the game is, what, Teclis and...
Ark in the Black Arcan? Is level 5.
Arcan
I don't
is level
know if Teclis is 5. I have the High Elf book, and I allegedly collect High Elves, but I haven't played with High Elves since the rules came out for them.
Do you have a High Elf army? Really? That's a thing? I've never seen it.
I built it that one weekend for
the Phoenix.
There was like one weekend.
Oh, that's right, you got a Phoenix! Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. It was like a thing that happened. I thought I was dreaming.
There was like one weekend where I just went nuts and built and assembled and based and got ready to go like several starter sets worth of the High Elves plus a couple models and then packed them up into a box and never looked at them again.
Perfect. That sounds great.
I did the same thing.
In fact, I bought some of your models from
because
you.
It's Ward.
So point is he's level 5, so he's going to be getting that benefit to dispel and cast over most armies.
He can, obviously, yeah, and he can store
he's
additional
got
Alkanash, power
dice. The Staff of Power.
Yeah.
I can't even say it. Alakanash? Is that right?
Alakanash.
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 He's also... Okay, so anyways, and that does what, Dan?
He can store unused power dice from like one phase to the next. So if up to 4, and I believe those can take him beyond his normal limits, so he can throw, like, 10 dice at a spell if he really wants to for some crazy reason?
Yeah, he can do, in addition to the 6 dice he's normally allowed to use when casting the spell, he can roll up to 10. So probably
you're
miscasting.
You're getting, and he can reroll on the miscast table.
That's what I was going to come
up
with.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy, because... it's just going to be insane.
And when he summons demons, when he summons undead, he summons like several times. He gets a multiplier for the amount of models that he raises. Yeah, so he's really good at the magic.
The magic.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about him. I don't know. Don't know if I'll get one of that model, but I can understand why people are very excited about him and how he's going to change the game, because... He can do shit on a level that no wizard has been able to do for, like, a couple editions of the game. Except maybe a slan.
There's a lot of people.
Maybe a slan with Ruminations of Power.
I don't even think so.
I've seen a bunch of pictures already from people posting up on the Edmonton Warhammer sites and such, where it's just like, check him out.
That's pretty sweet.
So, I like him.
So, now he's obviously an incredible caster, as he should be. He single-handedly devastated the Tomb King's homeworld with the incantations of Nagash. Like, our home world, home province, let's call it, I guess. I don't know what they want to call
country.
It.
Their country.
So he's a great caster, but he's no slouch in combat, because he has Zephet Nebtar, the Mortis Blade.
Zephet Nebtar.
He has a sharp stick.
He has a really, I don't know how that stick is quite as intense as its rules are, but it gives him +1 strength, so he's
effectively like a 20-foot long sword.
It's not a sword.
He has a giant sword on his hip that the model actually comes with him holding a giant sword
got a staff.
He has like a fleshy sheath for it, which sounds terrible.
Well, I got a fleshy sheath for my sword too, Dan.
Yeah. I'm surprised you
alien penis
so
sheath. But
I didn't even notice the fact that he even had a sword, but you're right. Yeah, he's got that is that a bone sword.
In a fleshy sheath. Really?
Yes, he has a giant bone sword in a fleshy sheath.
Okay, so anyways, the point is he's +1 strength with D3 wounds, so he's
so that bumps him
stuff.
Up to what? Strength 8?
Strength
D3
8.
Wounds?
Yeah.
With 7 attacks?
He's still not...
And Thunderstomp.
Yeah, he's a monstrous creature, so he's Thunderstomp. But he's not... Like, he's not an insane combat monster, which is... I mean, don't get me wrong, he's good. But you compare him to a Bloodthirster for half the points, he's not that much better.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're not paying 1,000 points for his close combat ability. Like, it's nice that he can take care of himself, but he's not like the one-man, you know, beat stick that some of these characters are.
No, he plays, I think he play. We haven't played a game with him yet. We have to put that caveat in, but I think he would play a lot like his fluff, where he would buff the army to an incredible extent, and he'd be able to hold his own. And, you know, still be able to beat up Cetra and those kind
of
guys.
Yeah, yeah, like, you're not going to, like, throw a unit of Fast Cav at him and have him disappear. Like, it's not even
like a Vermin Lord. The Vermin Lord will disappear with a unit of Fast Cav.
Yeah, like, waiting him into, like, a giant, stubborn Leadership 10 unit of guys with great weapons or something.
Not a good idea.
They'll grind the shit out of him eventually, but there's a lot of stuff that he can handle on his own. Like, it's...
Yep.
For 1,000 points, it's nice that, yeah, he's not the most defensible character in the universe, but...
So, we were talking... Like, we like the fluff book. We thought it was good. With the rules for Nagash and everything, what do you give this book as a rating, Ward? This I shouldn't say book. This
collection?
Set.
Collection? See, I'm biased, though, because me and Dan, we've been hardcore Tomb Kings for quite a while.
What are you... I'm the only one that has a painted Tomb Kings army around here.
I did.
Me and Dan?
I did. Well,
and Steve, it's sitting right there.
No, you weren't part of the club.
Are you kidding me? For ages.
You just got excluded.
What?
All right.
I just have to not paint my stuff and be part of the club.
To be fair, those are the worst painted models you've put out in a very long time.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? There's two models in there I'm very proud of.
Two?
Two. I will show you them after. Two is a good number.
Because this has rejuvenated my excitement for fantasy, and it's a tie into, like, the undead, which I so like the Tomb Kings, I'm going to give it five. $5.
Even at $100?
Even at $100. I bought it, didn't I?
Yeah, I guess you bought it.
Yeah.
You bought some...
And I'm excited to buy Nagash.
Are you going to pick up the Nagash?
I will be buying the Nagash.
Nice. Yep. I like it. Mike.
I
know you're not a fantasy guy at heart.
You know what? It sounds really cool. I'll say four. How's that? I can't give it the full five.
Okay.
But I can give it four. Okay.
Dan, you bought it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's the first thing for fantasy that I bought in, other than like the odd army book, it's the first Warhammer fantasy purchase I've made in a couple years. Like, I went out, I got it, I was pretty stoked about it, and it did not disappoint. Like, the art in the fluff book is awesome, the rules, some of the stuff seems pretty aggressive, but at the end of the day, knowing that some of the other races, like Chaos, presumably next, are going to get a very similar treatment to the undead.
Greater demons that look like Nagash, in that same sort of crazy sculpt style.
If there's like $100 plus like Wraith Knight sized greater demons on the horizon,
as they should be,
that can't be a bad thing.
I think that would be incredible. So what was your rating? I didn't catch it.
I've got to give it the five. At the end of the day, it is the first thing that's made me want to play Warhammer Fantasy in a long time. Like, I picked up the Dwarf army book hoping it would do the same.
Didn't.
And I bought the book and I read part of it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where that stopped. Whereas this is making me, like, you know, go through and, like, look at my old Khemri stuff that I never finished working on. And, like, it actually has me, like, wanting to paint fucking bone till the end of time. I never thought anything would be able to accomplish that, but it's actually making me consider it.
I'm going to give it a five.
Oh.
I haven't bought it yet.
Oh.
Specifically because I really like the Tomb Kings and how they're, like, a very noble kind of, I want to say people, noble... rotting carcasses. And Nagash has always been the bad guy. Neferat has always been the bad girl. So I'm not a huge fan of the characters and their background, but I immensely love everything about this release.
It is pretty sad to read about some of the characters don't fare so well when Nagash comes knocking.
Or Cetra.
Cetra kind of gets shit-pounded in a little bit.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about not Nagash comes knocking, but people come back to talk about Nagash to Cetra. And how to defeat him. And certain characters
disappear.
Are you
doing spoiler stuff again?
I said certain characters disappear.
I haven't read all of it, but yeah.
Anyways.
But yes, let's just say that I never liked Cetra before. He was one of the few Khemri characters that I didn't like. I now really like the guy. He's awesome. He's badass.
Cetra's always been a boss. I've always liked him. His model was a little silly. His, like, four-chariot thing, or four-horse thing.
The one... sentence in the book where it's just like, oh yeah, go awake the Tomb Kings. Oh, which ones? All of them. It was just like very...
He's got some lines.
Yeah.
He's pretty sweet. So I'm excited about it. I'm going to pick up the book simply because I want the Force Orb, because I do want to take... Setra was how many points before? He was like 600?
Six something.
I have a book right here.
Oh!
He was very difficult to fit in a list along with the heroes that you need to make to make the army work. Tomb Kings are very...
He was 475, so you actually could fit him in a 2,000-point list.
Yeah, you could, but you couldn't get... Because he also was the army's Hierophant, and there was a bunch of other things, so you couldn't get him and like a prince to buff another unit. He was a very difficult one to build an army around.
Yeah, with his whole like jealous command, or whatever you call it, where he wants to be the only one... running around leading that army, so he really did put a lot of restrictions on your force. But
well, not even so much that, the fact that he put the restrictions on, but on top of that you couldn't fit in like the necrotex because he was too many points, that kind of thing. With this new force org, I can totally see Setra fitting in a list along with Kalita, and I'm just
that in the same list would be like, that's like what, 800 some points?
That's awesome. Kalita in an archer block and then Setra leading a chariot block. How do you get more Tomb Kings than that?
That's true. That less they did crank that shit up to 11 a little bit with that
less
combo.
Less than Nagash as well for those two.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. The two of them combined are still like 100 and some points less than Nagash.
Poisoned arrows with Kalita? On Nagash? Double tapping?
Yeah, that unit could probably kill Nagash.
I think it could be a lot. I think it could be a decent army. And the thing is you'd only have to paint like 60 or 80 skeletons.
And that kind of ties into something else that we haven't really talked about yet, is we haven't even begun to talk about how this book affects the vampire counts in Khemri.
So that's the other thing about this book. We gave it a rating before we even got to the new army list that this thing gives you, which I completely forgot about because I don't give a shit about vampire counts. I just don't care. and that's my bad. I'm sorry if you're a vampire counts fan. I think Tomb Kings are way more badass. Because they are.
They don't sparkle in the sun, which is good. Because they spend a lot of time in the sun. So.
Yeah, bleaching in the desert sun. But this combines the undead legions into one list.
It's called Undead Legions, and use Tomb Kings and Vampire Counts.
Now, the last time we saw that was 4th Ed.
But, to be fair, you can't use everything from either book, which I agree with.
There's a few Cetra, things
you can't use Setra, and that's fair. Because Setra is mortal enemies with Nagash. He shouldn't be allowed to. So I'm okay with that. Anybody got a problem with that?
No, none.
It does kind of suck that this is the first time in year. This is the first time ever where I thought Setra was a cool character, and now I can't use him in this list.
Then don't.
That's a bit tragic.
Be a good guy, Tomb King player, like I want to do.
Yeah, I think
good. That
was it. The City of Numos, I think, was
Numos,
the list that I wanted. Were they the one where their leader of the city is like the bone giant with the priest inside its chest? Or is that a separate city?
We can look, you know, after the podcast, we'll find out.
Because it has been a long-ass time since
Numos
I went...
was in the previous Tomb Kings book. They talked about that a lot. The Black City, they had a ton of humans that lived in the city as well.
I think that was the thing, yeah. They
didn't have all undead.
Yeah, they had humans that they let live and cultivate the lands to give them the illusion of, like, the old kingdom, which I thought was super cool.
They had, the tribesmen that lived outside the wall. The Tomb Kings came out and
that's
were like,
right.
You're going to live in here amongst the City of the Dead. Yeah, I think
the city with the priest living inside a bone giant was a separate city, but like I didn't like a lot of the
Numos had a ton of fast cav that was supposed to be like living humans, not dead humans, I guess. That was pretty profound.
But so it'd be slightly less dry brushing of bone, which is not a bad thing. But so a lot of the cities that I liked before were some of the like the smaller, like weird, like, you know, you have to dig pretty deep in the fluff to like find them.
Yeah, the hipster cities.
Yeah, the hipster cities. Sure, let's go with that.
I like this city before.
Before it was cool.
Before it came out of the desert.
But so it's, I don't know. I still don't know totally what kind of list I'd be running because I am torn in like multiple different directions. But
you have 63 unit choices or something to pick from, right? I think it's 63 was the number.
And if you use a little bit of like creative proxying now to like get some of the units from one list thematically into the other, just to cover your bases in game terms.
Yeah.
Like, oh, do you want, like, a Vargeist or something, or, like, a Terrorgeist or something for its totally badass rules? Just find some way to convert a Sphinx or something else that's a similar size into a giant, winged, like, desert version of a Nightmare instead of a bat.
How about a Mortark? Not a Mortark. What are they called? The new monstrous infantry guys.
Morghasts?
Morghasts? Are they Morghasts?
I'm pretty sure they're Morghasts.
There's a... The stuff is kind of hard to tell apart.
The winged guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're Morghasts?
Yeah, there's two kinds of Morghasts. There's the special and the rare versions.
They were the ones before Nagash left and then the ones after, right?
They were... Basically, they were the sun god Petra. He forged like this...
Do you say the P in that one? P-T-R-A?
Petra?
Is it Petra or Tra?
Morghast Harbingers and Morghast...
Arcani or something?
Yeah.
Arcai. Yeah. One has armor, one doesn't. I can't remember.
Yeah, there's basically like two levels of these, you know, pseudo demonic celestial creature type things that were forged by the gods to fight Nagash. And then he kicked the shit out of them and raised their corpses into his like uber followers.
Yeah.
And as the Winds of Magic are stirring again, like the fluff background is that the Winds of Magic are strong enough that he can actually animate them again for the first time in like hundreds of years.
Thousands
of years.
They look
so cool. I still don't know if I want to put them into an army list, but at the very least, I want to buy a box.
But you can
convert one
totally
of them to be a demon prince for 40k.
Yes.
I want to convert one to be one of the demon princes for word bearers. Like, put like a different shoulder pad or something sculpted on there, and like you're good to go. He's a fucking demon prince.
Okay, let's move
Those
on.
Wings are
let's sensitive. Move on to models maybe now. Because now I want to talk about models.
Let's not. We're already kind of talking about models. Nagash, we already talked about last podcast. We all kind of thought he was pretty cool.
For the most part, we are all on board for Nagash.
I'm buying him. I'm giving him $5. He looks amazing.
Come on. We already rated him last time. Me and
I know.
Five.
I'm excited. Still.
Let's move on to the...
Want to do his lieutenants, the Mortarks first?
Mortarks. Neferata, because I like her the most.
Neferata? I think she's all right. She looks... I'd give her a 4.
I'd give her a 5.
I'm going to give her a 4 as well. So I
and
mean,
Mike is in
stupid.
The bathroom, so...
Mike will give her a 4. I'm going to go
sure,
with that.
Sure,
that seems fair. That's what he gave the
book.
Ark in the Black, I will give a 4 because I don't care as much about him.
As the Khemri lieutenant, he is my favorite of the bunch. He gets 5.
He gets 5 as well. This is why you're not part of the Toon Kings club.
No, because she's Neferata.
You're not oozing total fanboy.
The reason that I like Neferata is because GW does a very... Whenever they sculpt female models, it's always real weird. I think there's only two female sculpts they've ever done that are reasonable. And I think this is one of them. And she even has a stupid hat. But I still like it.
Yeah, her hat is a little bit much to me compared to, I don't know, Nagash, let's say.
You think Nagash's hat is less stupid than
His hat is less stupid than hers, I think. But, like, Ark in the Black,
Ark in the Black has a sailor's hat that's gone rogue.
Oh, no way. His is awesome.
This is just as dumb. Okay, but anyways, point is they all have really weird hats. I love the mount for Arkan, and I think Neferata's is just as good. I think they're incredible mounts.
Yeah, because the mounts, you basically get like a big chest armor plate, and then the heads are different, but the rest is the same kit.
If I built Neferata, I would use Arkan's, the Black's mounts.
The steed?
Head. The steed is
way
cooler.
Yeah, I don't like the head. I don't like the head.
That's the only part of the model I don't like. Okay, so we're all a fan.
Okay, Manfred?
4 or 5.
Manfred?
And yeah, Manfred, I'd give another 4.
Yeah,
he looks really cool, but he's not Ark in the Black.
Yeah, that's fair. I actually think that Manfred's mount would make a very good 40k. What the hell is it, Mauler Fiend?
Oh, that could be cool.
I think I don't actually like Manfred. I think he looks dumb. Like,
I'm not a huge fan of the current 8th edition vampire. At least not the, what are they called, the Von Karsteins?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them at all. I think they're trying to make them look too much like the vampires from Underworld. And I think that's just a stylistic thing that doesn't make any sense.
I like the
like that
old
weird
school,
sort of snarly face.
The old school Van Karsteins where it was like Dracula.
Where they were full on 50s horror movie?
Yes, yeah. It was fantastic. I was like, yes, I will.
Yeah, I think
guys.
They're two modern looking vampires and I'm not a fan. I think he's a great sculpt, but I actually think his mount makes an incredible Mauler Fiend.
I would give Manfred probably still only 4 out of 5. He's my least favorite out of that box.
Agreed. Mike, you're back.
I'm back.
Manfred, what do you think?
You know, he's okay. He's not the best. I'd say 4.
Okay, so 4.
So when we were just giving things random 4s when you were gone,
we were
right. Justified. We were totally
we were right.
Justified.
There you go, see?
Yeah.
So everybody was 4 on Manfred. Let's get a consensus here.
Sure.
We actually agreed on something as
I
a podcast.
So.
Let's just assume Tom is the one that would have been disagreeing.
Tom
and he's
would
not
disagree
here.
With that.
Okay.
Okay.
We gave Arkan. I'm giving him a 4.
I said 5.
Five.
What do you think?
He's got the biggest, smokiest stick.
He does have a very smoky stick.
There's weird things coming off the end of it.
Doesn't appeal to me at all, though.
Oh. I'm gonna say what? Three.
It just doesn't.
Whoa.
I just,
sorry. You're kidding.
I had to throw it in. Okay,
last but not least, Neferata. My favorite. I gave her a 5. Everybody else gave her a 4. Mike, you can ruin my day and tell me it's stupid.
Oh, no. Actually, I really like her headdress.
So yeah! Mike likes the hat.
Goodness.
Yeah. Mikey, he likes it. He likes it.
What? 5? You give her a 5?
I gave her 5.
I'm in. I think you're right. You're bang on. Mike, you have the correct opinion.
At the end of the day, for the most part, we are, again, all on board with
4s
the
Mortars. 4s and 5s for our ratings and for a model, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Point is, I think that was a pretty good release.
And we still haven't gotten to the Spirit Hosts and the Morghasts.
We're going to get to the Morghasts right now because I think they're the next ones that I gotta go 5. Either of them, the Archai or the regular. I think they're the wings alone, the sculpts and the tattered wings.
The tattered wings that blend into the ghosts that are emerging from the ground. Like,
okay, I'll find it. That Mike's cool. trying to get me to pull them up here in the book.
I'm gonna go with a 4 on them. Just some of the heads I don't think are 100% for me, but like the bodies and the wings are freaking awesome. And I love your idea now that like.
With the Demon Princes?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, you can make a mean 40k Demon
Just
Prince.
Doing a collection of, like, 3 of them for your, like, shelf.
Why don't you give them a 4?
I give them a 4.
You're on drugs. That's totally a 5, man. Those are awesome
hey,
looking.
Hey, listen. I don't think you can say anything for, like, bad-mouthing Arkham the Black.
I think the only...
You gave him a 4!
No,
that's really good.
No, I gave Karstein
3. Gosh. And we're all okay with Karstein. Yeah, 3. Okay.
What are you talking about?
The 4... I'll give you that the heads are a little too smiley in some of the sculpts, but that's it.
He's very happy in death.
Skulls do smile. Have you ever looked at a human skull? It's creepy with the rictus grin. Like you got it. That's actually pretty accurate. I think that's a good sculpt. Yep. You're right. I think it's a little less. It could be a little more menacing. But you put like some sort of demon prince type head on there. Holy crap! They'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Entirely one shoulder pad, like.
Just a little bit of 40k detailing, and you have demon princes that aren't metal or fine cast or anything terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Super cool. Like, again, the wings blending into the ground with all the spirits and stuff.
Did
like,
you notice the staff?
So neat. Yeah.
The entire staff has screaming faces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole way through. Like, not just the one in the blade.
The Morghast staff. The Morghast Archai, with the halberds, and they have a little bit more armor plating on their heads and torsos and stuff. They are so much better detailed than the two-hand weapon guys. The poses look a little bit more natural as well. But that is what I was going to say is maybe in my opinion, the only knock against this kit is it's one of those kits where you get not a lot of posing options, I don't think, in them because of the complexity of the build and the fact that there's only 2 of them in the box.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at getting, they're bloody expensive. You're not going to need many.
Two in the box is still, a little weird. I don't get it.
I would love if they had a third variant in the box. It'd make it a little more expensive. But if you had the third variant in there, so if you do a unit of like 5, they're not going to all look like the same. Mm-hmm. I think that would have gone
a
little
5,
bit further.
You're nuts.
Well, one is a demon prince, so.
Oh, that's right. Actually, makes sense.
So two. It would be 2 boxes of 3. One is a demon prince, and so I have 5 left over.
Oh my god, I can't imagine the cost because they're what, $90 a box?
It's something like $80 or $90 for 2.
So if you put a third one in there. Ugh, that hurts.
Yeah, they're a little bit more because they're not like 800 points per unit, so they're a little bit more cringeworthy than the characters.
But I'm
like,
actually okay with that when you talk about their points cost versus 10 dark elf witches.
True,
they look really good for the same cost.
Yeah, they're better than witch elves.
Yep.
They're way more bang for your buck than a witch elf.
Let's talk about Volton. He doesn't have a new pose, but I want to talk about how much I hate that model, just because of the book.
Like Fabio with the giant hammers?
Oh, I hate him. I think he's dumb. I'm trying to find the Spirit Hosts. I know what they look like. I'm trying to find them for you, Mike, because I don't think you've seen them.
No.
I think there are 5. I think they're another one of those incredible sculpts.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're super well highlighted in the army book, actually.
Actually, you know what? That's something they've, I think, missed. They're not even in...
I'm sure they're in the book. They're just because they don't have rules in the book, they aren't featured nearly as prominently.
They're not in the.
I thought I saw one in
the
scenarios.
There they are.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna give them a 4. They kind of remind me of a lot of the Wood Elf
branch race.
Branch race.
The
so
Draits.
Druids, yeah.
Dryads.
Same thing.
Yeah, they kind of have that weird, like, the textures kind of blend together, but at the end of the day, they're a freaking ghost. They're one color.
Yeah.
They're like the weird ghostly... You could paint them Ulthuan gray all day long.
Ooh.
That's your favorite color. That's
my favorite color. Fun fact, if anybody ever needs a trivia question about me, favorite color, Ulthuan gray. 100%. Use that thing right in.
That's your jam.
That is my jam.
And I think the cool thing about them, too, is if you replace a lot of their little weird daggers and stuff with the Khemri Kopesh, like the sweet-ass sword.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They would look very cool with that curved, sweeping blade. And they would also look very much more Khemri, which is obviously what I'd be going for. So I definitely have that conversion in mind already.
Man.
I'm going to give them a 4. I don't think they're a full 5 because they are... I think I like the sculpt. I think I like them. I want to see someone paint them in some sort of crazy way that I haven't thought about. Like some sort of, I don't know, make them look glowing or whatever. The way they have them painted in all of the photos is
pretty bland.
It's so bland. I think the sculpt is good.
Yep.
But I just need to see them done in some sort of crazy way. And I can't come up with a way to paint them in my head that I think would benefit the sculpt.
I think the trick for them too would be if you, because with the whole ethereal ghosty thing, you want them to look glowing. And the best way to make them look glowing is to have a dark backdrop. So I think having those like bright brown bases that they're based on is not the way to go. Like, I don't know how you would theme them in with a Khemri list.
I thought about doing them blue and then have this trying to do the sand almost like a bluish purple.
Yeah, if you had like a really dark, and especially if there was like a little bit of like OSL bleeding off the ghosts themselves, like to the sand around them. You could do some pretty cool stuff.
I still can't figure out a good way to paint them. What do you think, Mike? You got any idea about painting ghosts?
Yeah, no, I'm not a big fan. That's probably one of the hardest things to do. It's got to be subtle, and you got to know what you're doing when you do it.
I will say a point for them, though, is if you want to paint up a model fast, white with a little bit of green ink and a dry brush would make them look pretty ghostly.
Yep, I think these models will definitely be... Like, they'll be really quick to make them look passable, but they'll be really difficult to make them look really good.
Yes.
And that's my reason I'm giving them a 4. Or what are you giving them?
I'm giving them a 4.
Same reasons?
Similar reasons. Again,
a little too wood elfy.
A little bit for me, yeah. So I think that they're way better than previous spirit hosts.
Those things that look like dollar store Halloween decorations.
Let me just hold out my arms.
Yeah, I don't even know what that thing's doing.
But no, there's just something like lacking. I don't know if it's the paint job or something, but I'm giving them a 4.
Mike.
You're going to boo me, but I'm just going to say 3 because it just doesn't appeal to me. It really doesn't. There's something missing for me, and it just doesn't grab me.
I think that's totally reasonable. No one's going to boo you for that one. There is something, I think, missing. I didn't think everybody's touching on that.
With
paint job or what?
Yeah, no. There's something missing.
With so many other stellar models, they're also like in the bottom of the pack.
Yeah. Are you going to buy these guys or the Morghast or a Mortark or Nagash? That's what I'm having trouble with. I got to buy the book because I want the Force Orc because I actually want to play that. And then I want Neferata because I want to have her and Kalita to be able to fight and Kalita will get her ass kicked, but that's beside the point. I just want to have that model, but then I also kind of want to paint Nagash, and pretty soon I'm in for this for 300.
And it's three models.
What happened?
They're like two models.
Two models in a book!
Two models. They're just really big.
And that's the thing is, I also have the Dark Eldar release coming up that has a model and one codex, and it's the same cost. I don't have $600 to throw at 40k and fantasy, but the thing that is, I'm actually kind of not upset about this. I like the fact that I want to buy this stuff. That I'm not just like, this is a cool model, but I'm never going to play it in the game.
It's kind of refreshing to actually have some enthusiasm for Warhammer Fantasy again. Like, it's been a while.
Yeah, and I mean, we always used to, when I was a kid, I always would go, I can't afford this stuff, but I'm so excited to buy it. And I'm in that same mode, just with way more dollars, that's kind of disgusting. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
You're kind
like, instead of just my allowance for months, it's now my mortgage for months. Like, we're getting into that territory, you know?
Alex, can I buy this instead of Mom? Can I buy this?
Exactly. It's crazy, but I am excited and I want this stuff. I just don't know what to buy first.
That's pretty cool. That's a good ringing endorsement. And
I
didn't get to give my puck rating to the ghost dudes.
Oh, yeah, because no one cares.
But I'd have to give them, like, maybe a 3.5 as well.
Yeah, we're all in the same boat.
With a bit of conversion work, they can be done a little bit fancier, but again, they're...
They're
not the reason to get excited about this expansion. There's something that... They're a decent model. They replace a terrible model, but they're not the showpiece that these other models are. They cannot hold a candle to Nagash and the Morghasts and all the rest of it.
So we got questions still. We've got a bunch of other things we want to cover. Let's talk about this in terms of a tournament standpoint. The biggest thing is going to be, do you allow the Force Orc? I am head over heels, yes. You allow this Force Orc in tournaments. I think it makes it accessible to play in a tournament with an army that you're starting instead of having to spend $1,000 even as a veteran player for a new army to get into a 2,000 point tournament. I'm going to pick up a bunch of heroes and a couple of units and we're going to go.
Cool.
I'm in. I think it's great. We're going to leave you for last because you have the most to say, Ward, about this for the moment.
All right.
Mike, what do you think?
You know what? I want to sit on the fence on this one because I don't know enough about it to say it, and it could impact a lot of stuff that we don't see right now that could change things. You know what?
I totally get that, and my point on it is I don't give a shit.
Okay.
I don't know. If the game isn't balanced, that's fine. I'm excited about it. It's going to be fun for the most part because fantasy characters die. There's very few unkillable characters, which is not fun.
And if they are unkillable, you just allocate your attacks onto the unit and bypass them.
Yeah, I think...
Because if you're unkillable, you're generally not doing that much damage. There's not a lot that can do both.
Yeah, so I think it should be, even if it isn't balanced and the game sucks for the moment, the fact is I can afford to start an army and get back into it. Because my Tomb Kings are in no way competitive, but I'm looking at ways that they are suddenly.
Yeah, they went from being like the permanently mediocre list to like they've got options now.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to spice them up, add in a few different new models. And I think every army has that option now with, oh, I can take a dragon that I never could have fit in before. And I can, you know, fit it in a case to bring it to a tournament. Because I don't have 200 Skaven models to bring.
Are you sure? Yeah, because that Nagash model pretty much takes up a whole case.
That's true. But you might not need a Gash. You could take a Mortark or two.
Okay, all
right. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying. You're entirely right. It's he's a bit of a beast. But like for my Skaven list, transporting that to a tournament is a nightmare.
You have hundreds of models, plus your Bells, plus your Doom Wheels, plus all your Hell Pits. Yeah, if you can cut some of that massive amount of models out of your case, that's not
hurting.
Take
an Exalted Verminlord. If we want to start talking about this is down the road for Storm of Magic and some of the other monsters, but take an Exalted Verminlord. He's 775 points. You can still fit in Warlord with Fellblade, so you can kill Nagash, true to the fluff.
Although, the Fellblade was part of the ritual to summon Nagash, so the Fellblade doesn't exist anymore.
What?
I don't know if that's it. I don't think it's in
Spoilers!
The rules. I don't think it's in the rules.
No, the new Skaven book is totally not going to have a Fellblade now. You've ruined everything! God damn it!
I like to ruin Steve's day.
And Steve's not excited.
I am still excited, because I don't really care. The Exalted Verminlord, I still think, could take Nagash in a fight, no problem.
Because he doesn't have the Fellblade. He just has a giant...
He just has D6 wounds. Fuck you. I'm initiative 10 ASF. And higher weapon skill, too.
Yeah, he would probably win that fight.
Yeah, which is crazy. He lands 2 attacks and does 12 wounds. What? Anyways... I can't say enough. Dan, what do you think?
In terms of tournament play, I can see no reason why you wouldn't allow this. Like, at the end of the day, it's...
Everybody else gets to do it, too.
Yeah, all the armies get it. All the armies get the new lore. All the armies get the new Force Orb chart. It'll affect some armies more than others, just because that's some armies are very character-friendly and some are not.
The game is not balanced in the first place, so if you assume that a change is going to make this chess... I think you're out to lunch, so your entire... I don't think you have to worry about that.
Yeah,
armies are going to get a buff.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not too worried about it in terms of game balance or anything like that, and it really does... It really does let you play a style of game that was unfeasible before that is a little bit easier to approach, and you don't have to paint, like, 800 models, so it's good.
You still can if you want to, and that's what I love about it.
They're not taking away your ability to go full-on horde if you want to. There's still some really good advantages to doing so. It's just you can go to the opposite end of the spectrum if you choose.
Mike's pointing out the time here. We've got
It's not being me. It's just you're going too far. It's, yeah.
Oh, I know.
We're going not too far.
And
Ward
hasn't even
we're
had a
so
chance
excited
to
about
talk.
This. Ward, okay, so now that we've all gone and said, or not we've all, but more everybody's either on the fence
all
or
the,
hugely,
all the important people have talked.
Hugely in favor of this. Like, I'm so in favor of this, I'm thinking about playing fantasy instead of 40K for the first time in a tournament in years, I want to say. 3-4 years?
Probably.
What are you doing? Are you you think this is good?
I think it's good. I think it is the direction that fantasy is going in, so
good.
Embrace it right now on the ground level.
So, Onslaught, you're an A.
Onslaught, it's in.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and that's why I'm having trouble.
And that's also and that's also why Fantasy has sold out, and I've had to open up extra spots.
Like, that's awesome. To accommodate, I can't think of how awesome. I can't. This is the first time Fantasy sold out in what? How many years? 3 years?
I have reduced spots because of all the other game systems now that I'm that I'm expanding. But yeah, the first time that it's been.
Well, last time you ran it, you didn't even have you didn't even sell it to 24.
Usually, yeah, 3 weeks prior is like when most people start signing up. It's 5 weeks out, and yeah, like sold out.
And so. You're currently looking at cannibalizing spots away from War Machine and back into Fantasy.
I have.
What is happening?
Who would have seen that coming?
Like that, I think that speaks enough right there that people are doing crazy things, excited about it, playing with models they haven't used in ages. It's going to be awesome. Although I do want to see, this is the thing that I cannot, I hope happens, somebody brings the old Nagash model.
The old Nagash model would be awesome.
And it's just like, yeah, I got Nagash, he's 1,000 points.
Put him on a put him on that giant, like, 100 by 150 mil base.
Build, like, a little house for him, a little diorama.
I like this.
A little bone hut.
He's thunderstomping. He's the same size as an infantryman.
I had an old Nagash model, and
I want to see that so bad. Somebody just goes overboard with like a diorama on that base, and he's just so small and shitty. I want to see that really
bad. That'd be pretty funny. But I know that at least one person is bringing Undead Legions.
I know. Yeah, I heard you talking about this.
I'm pretty sure that you'll see a Nagash at the event.
Or you might. The one thing I'm interested to see if you see a Nagash or you see like Imperial Knights. Like, everybody has one playing Undead Legion somehow.
Kind of also, on the flip side for the tournament, I was talking to some people, and they're like, well, I mean, like, 50% like lords, 50% heroes, that sort of thing. But, I mean, it's putting all your eggs in one basket as well, right?
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
The less that you have,
for sure.
There's mm-hmm. also scenarios involved, so...
Nagash is not going to like a dwarf gunline.
No. And Fantasy is also very well balanced by the scenarios. Like, you play the breaking point scenario, you put like 3 or 4 units on the table. We've seen and heard of armies that literally auto lose the second the game starts because there's such a like ridiculous eggs in one basket build.
I don't think people care.
Yeah, and the real fun part with Nagash as well is if you just summon shitloads of units that have banners in them and just hide them behind hills.
You just start with 3 and then just...
Start with the bare minimum and then just like start summoning all these little tiny units of skeletons with banners everywhere. And you're like, don't hit my breaking point. Don't hit my breaking point.
I like that. That's kind of cool.
It
amuses me.
I don't think it's wrecking the game. I think that it's bringing a level of excitement and it gives players that versatility that 40K has now.
Yeah. And I don't think it's overboard like 40K. I think
and it'll be interesting when other End Times books
exactly
make their
when the future books come out.
Like the next book is rumored to be a chaos book that unifies the demons and the warriors of chaos again.
Yeah,
like
back
it's about
to
fucking
fourth.
Time.
I've heard
back to every edition except for this one, pretty much.
Yeah, End Times Archaon potentially.
Yeah,
he was an amazing sculpt when he came out.
If they do like a giant plastic. Like multi-part plastic
Archaon,
especially if it's like a mounted one, and then you can like put them on foot where it just has like a separate set of legs you could magnetize.
I know
that'd be so cool because I gave Tom my Archaon on foot a million years ago,
and you want him back,
and I want him again.
I think it would be awesome, but I don't think that they would do it with a multi-part kit. With the different artifacts, so you could do Archaon at different stages.
Like before he gets the crown, before he gets the sword,
he gets the different stages.
That's an entirely different podcast because we could go on for ages about that campaign.
And I'm sure everyone really wants to hear
about
it.
Go get it.
So.
Yeah. Everybody's into the Nagash book.
You need it.
You're gonna need it eventually, I think. You might be able to hold out till 9th. They might do it then, but
I'd say
it's
more
so
fundamental.
Good.
I'd say it's more fundamental to the game than your like escalation and planet strike
and
that sort of
the
thing. Like, granted, those for the most part are legitimate in 40K. Like formations and Lords of War, they're a thing now. They're a legitimate part of the game.
In here, like,
this is so much more
planet
relevant.
Planet Strike says, oh, take 6 elites and like 6 heavies.
Yeah,
or
Planet Strike
it was.
Especially is kind of shit. But
it changed the Force Org, but it was just for that.
Yeah.
This is everybody the whole way through, no matter what you are,
so
this
like,
is
like
the
escalation
fantasy rules. Like escalation.
Yeah.
It's but a not legitimate even so much where it was a gray area kind of escalation thing. Like, there was not, this is the 40K rules. It was,
ask your opponent, maybe
you can use this in games of 40K. That means you can use this in games of 40K is still like, so is it 40K kind of thing? This is the rules.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it's a way more essential purchase than the 40K expansions.
100%.
I think we're arguing, but trying to agree. So
we're just excited about it. We're just talking about the same thing because we're excited. Okay. We got to go on to the mailbag.
We're going
to
answer a couple quick questions. We got a few lengthy questions, which
we're going to trim down.
Yeah.
We can answer the other part in
There's plans for future episodes.
Yeah, this isn't the last one. We'll keep going.
I don't think we'll need to ask for more mailbag questions for a while, because some of these questions could be like an entire episode.
There are like six-parters.
Who has the questions up?
Let's go with Dan's first one.
With what?
You got the first one.
I don't have them up on... Oh, sorry.
Prepare!
You said you could always keep it up.
Yeah. That's true. I actually made that exact comment.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Okay.
And now it's not working.
The comment from Chris?
Yes.
All right, so the
Should
comment...
Should we end with that one? That one was a little more controversial.
Okay, fine.
Should
end
with that one?
Okay, so let's start with mine. Trevor says, I'm thinking about getting into Drop Zone Commander. I know a couple of you have mentioned it briefly on the podcast before, but I don't know anyone else who plays it or anywhere that runs events. Any thoughts to how I could get into it when I don't have a friend that also wants it?
Mike?
Well, a couple things. I think Ward's going to have some open tables at Onslaught. I'd be more than happy to bring some stuff along to show people what it's like to get into it. Maybe meet some other people that are getting into it at the same time. I also know that it's going to be playing it out of the basement in January, for a fact.
And we're going to be doing at least... We had four people last time.
Yeah. And so it'll be bigger than that. It always grows as it comes along. It's the first year's always the worst. But other than that, I don't know if there's any places that are actually playing Drop Zone right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's any like leagues or pickup games.
There is a Facebook group,
yes,
as far as I know.
Yes.
And it's a local Facebook group for Drop Zone. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head. We'll put it in the show notes. You need to take a look at that one. And you could probably get some games going there, is my guess.
It doesn't have a lot of traffic, per se, because, again, it's not a system that gets played around a lot.
It's still relatively new.
It's super new. It's less than a year old, isn't it?
It's more an in-your-house kind of games.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to get into it and you don't have a friend that is into it, I would suggest going to an event. Even if you're not partaking in the event, just to check out the tables, meet the other players.
For sure.
That's a good way to get your name out there for gaming and such. It is called the Edmonton Commander... Drop Zone Commander Edmonton. That's it. Easy.
That's pretty easy.
Commander other than Edmonton. I can't say it.
Other thing I was going to say is these events are great. You're talking about going to these things. Locally, they're just starting to get some steam. I would go, if you really want to get serious about this, probably the biggest tournament I'm thinking in North America for Drop Zone is going to be the LVO. The guys down at Frontline Gaming have really embraced Drop Zone.
So Las Vegas Open?
Las Vegas Open, yeah. I think we can just...
That's a big thing to fly there just to check out the game. I personally maybe wait till January.
I'm saying,
and then,
if you want to get some games in and play some stuff, that's a good place.
It will be out, you said, at Out of the Basements event in January.
And we're doing, what, 1,500?
Check it there.
I believe it's 1,500.
That's pretty much the tournament standard.
And like Hawk has been really good there. They've helped us get some terrain for that. So all the tables will have the cityscapes on them. So
sweet.
We have enough to do 8 tables. So
Nice. Yeah.
So sure. Getting started is going to be a little tough because there's not many people playing it. But if you are interested in the models, they're really nice sculpts. They're good to paint.
High detail.
Send Mike some messages, or even we can possibly arrange a demo game for you.
Yeah.
Like Mike was saying, Onslaught has open tables Saturday night, and there will be some room on Sunday as well. So.
Yep, for sure. Perfect.
As long as he's not playing.
Pick up some stuff. It's not, you know, it's not the cheapest of game systems, but by no means is it 40K.
It's definitely not. Like, honestly, for about... say $300, you have a good size force and with some versatility, right? Anything else is you're being a collector at that point.
Two of the starter boxes and then some toys, you're pretty much good to go.
And the starter boxes have come down a huge amount if you hadn't noticed.
Really?
But you haven't.
I haven't noticed.
It's now 35 pounds for a Sheltari starter set.
Well, that is actually a really huge drop.
Yeah.
Because they were, what, 50 before?
They were about 110 Canadian.
Yeah.
They were 80-ish. 75, 80-ish. But now they're like half that price. They're plastics. That's, like I said.
Wow.
Get these ones now. My advice is when you do like it, get two starter sets. Because that's usually the right amount that you need for infantry and basic stuff.
If you're in Edmonton and you're interested in Scourge or UCM, Roy has a ton of stuff at Thunderground.
Yeah, yeah. He's carrying the starter set as well.
So it's a good place to go pick up some stuff. And I think he's probably interested in running some games for that. So you might be able to find some people out there that you can get in touch with too.
I think Roy just needs somebody to take it by the horns and actually start.
Yeah. I have too many things on my plate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying here. And it's hard for me to get to Roy.
We need to get that going.
It's a long walk.
Yeah.
It is an awesome system. I can't say enough good things about it.
Very balanced.
Very balanced. Very rock, paper, scissors, but everybody has rock, paper, and scissors, so it's very fair.
Yes.
Next question. Ready?
I think I am.
Okay. What type of bear is best?
Bears beats Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. There was too much of an awkward pause there. I had to fill it with The Office. Moving on.
David Roland asks a question. He would like to see discussed how 7th edition has changed 40K for the better, including, but not limited to, the near elimination of all 6th edition Death Stars, increased variety of lists/armies making the top tables, increased tactical abilities to win games, everything scores, non-objective secured detachments, etc. And that's where we're going to cut the question because there's
it,
more.
It goes on.
We're going to fill in different parts later. So.
Well, we'll add in the knights thing, but that's kind of part of it. So I think we were all really down on 40K at the beginning.
At the beginning.
Because there's a massive pile of changes in 7th edition, and it was pretty overwhelming.
If there's something I don't like, it's change.
We saw psychic phase as being very exploitable, and it's turned out that it's less so. The dispel thing isn't... Dispelling is still stupid and doesn't work. But the problem is miscasts are a problem, so you see the psychic Death Stars not being as prevalent because they have the issue with miscasts. And on top of that, you aren't guaranteed to get any powers off. Like, you throw 5 dice at something, you might suck.
And there's a Kalexis Assassin, so none of it will matter in the end, because there is a vicious hard counter in the meta now.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. The biggest thing is, initially, everything was still obviously a 6th edition codex with a few small caveats.
Yeah, most armies' psychic defense didn't work under the 7th edition. Like, oh, leadership penalty for enemy psychers. Well,
yeah, Shadow on the
what
Warp,
the fuck
awesome.
Good is that going to do? So
they've changed the meta so much. Like, yeah. Grey Knights have changed to make more sense. Then on top of that, they separated out the assassins and made assassins finally awesome.
Yeah, they're finally actually badass.
The Kulexis is really good.
In all honesty, this change didn't come right away. It was after the releases that have fixed everything.
As the army books have caught up to the edition,
so I think I was starting to make sense.
So we may have been down in the beginning, but it wasn't really an overreaction. It's because we hadn't seen the rest of what was coming out.
Yeah,
and those codexes and new books have changed how everything else is affected and worked on it.
I think you're entirely... I think we're talking about 7th edition didn't change 40K for the better. I think the release is after 7th edition. I think 7th edition was a great rule set, and now that they're changing things and fixing things, it's now becoming good.
Yes.
So that's what's eliminated the Death Stars. I think that's in my opinion, the biggest change in terms of making things awesome. But I will say...
But we can be honest, the elimination of Death Stars is not a bad thing, because if you ever had to play against one and you weren't ready for it, or you had the build that didn't work against it, it was painful to play against.
So I will say, though, I don't think it's entirely eliminated Death Stars.
But
if someone can take one, and if they get everything to work, you're going to have a terrible game and they're going to steamroll you.
Invisibility is still potentially game-breaking.
Yeah,
that's just one example.
Even Tigerius in with Centurions is incredibly good.
Yep.
I think there's still Death Stars, like one of the ones that
you're
going to see. Yeah, and I know exactly what you're saying. I think there's less of them, but I mean, Adepticon's allowing almost not infinite. You can't duplicate a detachment, so you can't take a CAD and then another CAD, so you can take as many formations as you want. So a lot of people are looking at Drago as a Lord of War, Centurions and Tigerius. So Gate guaranteed on Drago to take your Centurions and warp them up midfield. And then you murder things with Tytria's divination shenanigans. That
is still not, sounds painful.
That's going to suck. The reason I think that's not going to, that's not a, that 7th edition works is heaven forbid you have a Qlexus assassin that shows up and sits 12 inches away from you. Suddenly that psychic Death Star has no psychic buffs and can't move around. Ugh, like, that's a problem. Like, you might draw that. You might go top table and you might have no problem, but you might draw that. So I think that's what's changed most there. 7th edition in there, one of the things that I think we overlooked at the beginning was what OBSEC meant and scoring everything. Scoring everything was a huge boost to everybody because it meant you could take elites.
Yes.
And they had a purpose.
Elites were actually viable for the first time in years.
Yeah.
For the most part.
I mean, they're still not the best. They aren't, they don't have some of the benefits that heavy support or fast attack has, but the Sturmgard squad wasn't the only elites in the game. It isn't the only elites in the game that's worth taking anymore. I don't know. What do you guys think about the elites thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely made you know, them a viable option again, where fast attack and heavy support, you always had scouring and big guns never tire.
Yeah.
So you knew that almost every tournament, there was just about guaranteed to be a mission where having those extra units gave you these certain advantages to be the only guys that can capture these objectives.
How many troops did you consider a minimum to take in 6th Ed and 5th Ed? What would you say? Could you have ever taken 2 troops?
No.
You're right?
I was minimum 3.
Yeah.
Minimum 3. It was, and that's pushing it.
3 would be dicey. A lot of the times it was like you're trying to get at least 4. I mean, some of them at that point might be kind of shit, like throwaway units.
Depending on
the, but you probably had at least 4 scoring units.
But what we're saying is you never took the minimum, which was 2. You would always
take 2.
Depending on the mission also, too. Like, I would break up into combat squads, so that way it would be like, oh, now I have like 6.
Yeah, but even with like my Eldar in the old edition, I would take crappy units of Rangers because you needed scoring.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, well, I can take a unit of 5 Dire Avengers in a Wave Serpent. Why would I do... I could take them. They're good. Wave Serpents are great, OBSEC. But you might actually want to put 10 Dire Avengers in a Wave Serpent because they're OBSEC. They're actually a decent unit. Like, it gives you a reason to take bigger troops units. I think OBSEC was one of the things that we missed and I think has changed things for a huge benefit. And this is where we're going to... I'm going to briefly touch on Knights. Knights in... they got better in 7th with the damage chart and 7 and that whole thing for the damage explodes result. But they got worse in the fact that they used to be scoring, as in the only thing that could claim an objective. Now they are also scoring. They didn't get OBSEC. So I think Knights are still good. They're less killable. But the nerf to the D weapons as well as their OBSEC, losing OBSEC, I think has made them a very middle of the tier list, which is nice because they're a great model. They should be out on game tables. You don't need to take 3 like you used to try and get them to be scoring. So people are taking 2, which is a lot more tame.
Yeah.
More fun to play against.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they still will struggle in some matchups to pull their weight points wise. I mean, at the end of the day, God forbid somebody has an invulnerable save.
Like, yeah.
They're doing a couple of wounds a turn at that point if you have a decent invul. Like, for 300, 400 points a model to be doing a few wounds, like, yeah, it's... They're definitely not the auto, you know, auto-include that they used to be. They're still great, but they're not, like, the only kid on the block worth taking, so...
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about diversity, which is an old, old wooden ship...
We've been over this many times.
The fact that you don't need psychic powers to make the game work anymore allows HQs to be taken that aren't just necessarily beat sticks. You see a lot of interesting lists, like the one Adepticon had no psychers whatsoever. It had only 3 troops choices and then had 2 units of Fire Dragons. They were, mind you, all Wave Serpents, but you look at the list, had 2 units of Swooping Hawks and 2 Night Spinners and a Wraith Knight. That seems pretty tame, like a balanced list. It had an Autarch for reserves for the Swooping Hawks, which seems like, if I'm looking at an Eldar list, it has no allies, it has no special characters, it has nothing spammed other than the transport you can take, and then the fact that, I shouldn't say nothing spammed, it had spam, but in this generation of spam, like you're not taking 6 things that are all the same, right? Like you used to. It had 1 or 2 things here and there spam, but it was pretty tame. I like that. The list it played against, I think, on the top tables was a demon summoning bomb. Like, that's pretty cool. I'm thinking that all the things that you'd asked in your question, Dave, your answers are all yes. I think you were trying to point at this stuff.
It was a slightly loaded question.
Yeah, the answer to your question is yes. All right, next one. This is even more of a loaded question, I think.
Is this the one that I'm supposed to read? Yes, that's the one. All right, everyone's looking at me. So this is Chris. He posted it on the Facebook group here. It says, how do you guys feel about cheese/spam lists in the current tournament scene or the local scene? Do win at all cost gamers do more harm than good for the hobby? So I think that was kind of the first half there.
So win at all costs, I think we need to define that first of all. And your win at all cost gamers, they're not... There's a difference between a competitive gamer and a whack player.
Whack isn't out to make friends. He just wants to come in, crush your face, walk away, and laugh at you. A competitive player will still smile and try to have a good time, but he does want to win in the end.
Yeah, and
it is two different people. It is.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're not going to a tournament to lose. Like, nobody goes to a tournament expecting or planning, I should say, to lose all their games. Like, you're there because you want to play the games, you want to win, you want to have fun. That's the point.
I think competitive players get tarred with the whack brush, and that's not fair. Like, whack, in my mind, is the guy that, like, way back in the day, stretched the red range rulers in the oven to get an extra couple inches out of them.
Wow, that was so low.
Takes every possible lenient, or what's the word, every...
loophole that they possibly can.
Yeah, they're very, like, rules lawyer-y. If you give them an inch, they'll take a mile, like...
They also like to read the first, like, few sentences of a rule, and that's how they play it.
Read the first half of the rule, and not the qualifiers or limitations or drawbacks or those other things that often come as the second sentence of the rule.
So I want to go and say that a whack player, in my mind, is a stupid term, because everybody's going to try and win, not at all costs, but do everything they can win within the limits of the rule set, right? Like, that's reasonable.
I also think, depending on the event itself, you'll see different types of gamers come to these events, right? So, what's the biggest competitive one that you can think of?
Probably Nova.
Something like Nova.
Adepticon. Adepticon would be the biggest
one. So those ones are going to be a little bit more cutthroat. It's going to be more competitive. Depending on prizes as well, like if it's a cash prize.
Oh, yeah, this is a big thing for me. I've always noticed that trophies are a lot more, I don't know how to say it. People are a lot nicer at a trophy award. But if it's a prize, people are just nasty, and you can actually see name calling and anger, and it's all because of the money. It's like, whereas if a trophy, it's just a trophy, but if it's prizes, oh, look, I need that $500 in Games Workshop stuff, I'm going to be a total dick because I need it.
So, would you think whack players are good for the hobby?
I think at the end of the day, like, if you actually run into these people, which are an extreme outlier within the community, they're not a lot of pleasant group to be around, but they're not a realistic, I don't think, depiction of your remotely typical tournament gamer. They're out there, but it's not like every guy you run into is going to be that, sweaty BO, terrible sportsmanship, rules lawyer. Like, they're not that prevalent.
They are out there, but typically once they've been to a few events, they get weeded out really quickly.
Yeah, so. Actually, people let them know that they're not appreciated.
And here's a secret. Organizers talk. So, I mean, if you're being an asshat at one event, I'm sure the next event will find out and
maybe they might decline your registration.
Yeah, it does happen. It really does happen.
It does happen. That's happened a few times, actually, where people have declined.
So,
yep.
So I want to say they are bad for the hobby, but I want to also make the caveat that competitive play is very good for the hobby. I think it's good.
Yeah, but competitive is not a whack player. It's not.
For me,
anyway.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird rant, but for me, there's a difference between taking things seriously with like a small s and taking things seriously with a capital S. Capital S serious for me is like, again, where you're not having fun anymore. You're just being miserable. You're there to win, and all the other benefits are disappearing. So, like, that is bad for the hobby, but it's...
That's like a whack player. You're there to win. You're not there to have fun.
Yep.
Like, the competitive player, like, okay, let's talk about... If you go play basketball, you're probably there to have fun, get some exercise. You're not going to go play basketball to not have fun. Like, you could tell, all these things you should be doing it to have fun.
Yeah, you could tell, too, because sometimes when there are players like that, if they don't win their first game,
They're out of there. They've left the scene. They're not talking to anybody.
The rage quits.
Day two. Oh, yeah. No, we have to leave now.
Really?
If you do that, your registration the next time is probably not going to be accepted, frankly. That's a real bad one. Unless you're sick or hungover. That happens often.
It can happen. Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess use that excuse is what I'm trying to say. Next part of the question.
So, again, maybe a bit of a loaded question, but... whatever. Moving on. So he says, finally, do you think that game designers should be active in tournament rules designed to make them the most balanced events possible?
No. So...
yeah.
Probably have to agree
with that.
I don't think they should be, because if you try and design things as a committee, you end up with the Chevy Cavalier. And if you start trying to design things to a tournament standard where everybody's trying to play the same game, it's going to lose a lot of that flavor. It's not going to have a direction. I think that designing for tournament play in mind, that's maybe the realm of Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, there's some games, the games that don't have the same level of hobby element, they tend to have a lot more of that... Where the game designers are directly involved in creating the tournament packages. Yeah, it happens a lot in those styles of games.
Like you have a draft where you buy a new deck, you get all sorts.
Or a sealed deck environment, or whatever.
You gotta stop for a second. Okay, there are times when they should be involved and times when you shouldn't be involved. You should stop fist fights, but I mean, you should not limit the creativity at the same time. So you're talking about going one way with your Chevy Cavalier, and then there's the guy that has the Viper. Well, they're two opposite spectrums. You got to try and find something that's a balance.
I actually agree.
Okay, you can't let it go hog wild one way or hog wild the other way. It's not going to love it, because GW has gone one way, and then you know this company has gone this way. But you know what? They're two different things.
But at the end of the day, to me, like, the meat of this question is, are the tournament designers basically designing and running the events themselves? And that is not necessarily the way most games are set up. Like, the game designers provide the rule set, they provide the armies that you can, you know, put forth on the battlefield. But at the end of the day, most of the game systems, the game designers aren't remotely involved in running the events. And I like having that be up to the players.
That's usually up to the TO.
Yeah, like...
right, compared to the players. I mean, let's look at this from a different perspective. How many game systems have a tournament package?
Again, a lot of the less hobby. 50?
No, there's more. Why do you think?
X-Wing has them for sure. Oh, Privateer Press has several of them.
Hawk has it.
Yeah. Oh, Hawk does have it?
Yes, Hawk has one as well. Right. Privateer Press has one.
Privateer Press does. Now, I mean, they...
and there's... I'm sorry.
The advantage I think with the Privateer Press one is it's got different like levels, and the TO gets to pick and choose which levels they want.
Yeah.
What level of painting, level of like lists, what type of time event do they want, that sort of thing, which I really like. So there was a lot of thought put into that.
And X-Wing is very similar as well, where a lot of it is laid out and specified, but it does also mention in repeated places in the PDF that the tournament organizer is free to modify. Like, you can change the timing of the rounds, you can change the point sizes, just notify your players in advance so everyone's on the same page, and go for it.
And I'm fine with companies putting out a package like that that lets the TO kind of like cut and paste what they want out of it.
Yeah, as guidelines, it's a brilliant resource for tournament organizers. Help standardize things, get people pointed in the right direction.
I guess when I was talking about like the unified sort of look of this thing, I imagine is, okay, Hawk, he's doing a really good job of running sort of things. He's the creative force behind the company. He's also the game designer behind the company. He does everything more or less.
He's the sculptor behind the company as well.
He's the sculptor. He's got an artist working for him now, I think, is about it for his company. Like, he doesn't have much in the way of creativity staff. It's him. Running a tournament package and sort of engaging in that community right now while it's really small and growing is something. Can you imagine if you were a games designer that started having a conversation with the tournament goers at GW? Holy crap. What would you even get out of that noise?
GW has been an untamed horse for a long time, though. They haven't been in there. So saying that we came in and GW got involved in tournaments is totally different now, because they've let it go wild. It's up to the TOs now. It's not GW's domain ever again, because they've let it run wild too long.
But I kind of think that they've done... I think the independent circuit that's popped up around these
things, that's up to the TOs. Yes, but that's... Well, yes and no. Not everybody is going to agree with that because
it's Adepticon versus the old GTs.
I mean, a lot of tournaments are kind of banding together now and like copying pasting from each other, which is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, the designers themselves, I prefer giving the flexibility to the TOs. I wouldn't like it if they basically came out with a package and it's like, this is what you have to run necessarily.
Absolutely. I'm not saying, but they do have a hand in it and they can help or hinder depending upon what it is. I'm just saying it's not always one way. Sometimes they're helping, sometimes they're not.
Oh, for sure.
Privateer Press did good because they're saying, here's your options, do this. To me, that's help. They've also cleared up a lot of things.
No, I see what you're saying, and I think you're right. The argument where they should stay out entirely, they still have to develop a game system that's fun to play. But yeah, I just don't think, if it's fun to play in your basement among friends, it's probably going to be fun to play at a tournament.
Yep.
And that's what they have to do. Whether or not it's competitive... Is a secondary factor to fun, because if it's fun, it probably is competitive and balanced.
Yeah, to an extent. I think the best way that tournament...
But no, you're right, Mike.
The best way I think that game designers can support that is simply with having a decent FAQ document.
Yeah,
that like, helps a lot. If there are known issues with the game and points of confusion that will crop up, having a good FAQ can...
Or power creep.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the FAQs don't address that. Power creep, though, has to be there to sell stuff. Yeah, you have to have things be worth taking in order to sell a new product.
Yeah,
but in terms of maintaining balance, I think the role of the games designer is simply to have well written, easily understood rules where everyone knows what the hell the rule is actually saying, so that they can actually play the game and not sit there and argue about it.
Which is again, coming back to Hawk, he does a perfect job of that because he's at the helm. There's nobody else writing. You don't get different styles, different writers like GW, even Privateer Press. I think has some of that where they have different writers now, and there's some wording, some books that are a little bit better than others.
Yeah.
The majority of game systems have learned from mistakes of the past, and FAQ documents in a lot of cases are like, it's like day one DLC. A lot of the times they know what the problems are. There's at least a rudimentary FAQ up a lot of the times at launch of a lot of new products.
Yeah.
It's not always the case. Not every system has that, but
yes,
it is a very prevalent and established part of the tournament scene is to have these FAQs, and I think that is the responsibility of the game developer to like run a decent game that's actually playable. In terms of actually designing the events, guidelines are great, but there needs to be a lot of freedom for the community to do its own thing.
Especially since the meta is totally different from different place to place, right? So
yeah.
Okay, game designer, in or out of the tournament scene?
Direct involvement, low. Yes or aside. No? This is silly. If it was yes or no, we could have skipped this entire conversation. But
we'll sum it up.
Limited involvement required.
Out.
Limited involvement.
Okay. I think we've gone well over our time.
Yes, oh, yeah. We've smashed right through it.
So, there's another episode of Hobby Night in Canada.
Wait, whoa.
What are we missing?
We're missing upcoming events quickly.
Oh!
Yeah, because we haven't talked about Onslaught enough yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just giving dates. Shut up.
Jeez, okay.
So, September 27th, Uncontrolled Fury War Machine Tournament in Edmonton is now sold out. Sign up next time.
Good announcement.
Too late, suckers.
September 28th, Attack Wing Board Collective Organized Play 2. It's going to be an Attack Wing event at Warp 1 in Edmonton. September 29th, Borg Collective 3 is going to be at the Adventurers Guild in Edmonton.
I need to go to that. I played in the first two, and I want to win something for a change.
October 18th, From the Ashes. It's a War Machine tournament put on in Grand Prairie by some of our gamers that like to come down every once in a while.
Yeah.
They're really good guys. If you're in War Machine, go up there and play some games.
Yeah, should be good. October 24th and 25th, IntrigueCon. I just found out about this today. It's basically a tabletop RPG convention. It's going to be in Edmonton. There's now, I know, posting on the Onslaught page and Edmonton tabletop Warhammer.
RPG, like, is that...
Anyway, I don't even know what that means, but I need to look it up.
They're doing like role playing games, and they got tables where you can sign up and play games for the Friday night and the Saturday.
Maybe they'll play Dark Heresy if you're a 40k fan.
They're actually asking for somebody to run a Warhammer RPG event there too. So
I'd play a Space Marine because they're totally out of control. Anyways,
October 25th and 26th, Onslaught here in Edmonton, multi system tournament. November 1st, Thunderground has their 22nd Steamroller. It's a War Machine tournament in St. Albert. And November 8th is Death by Dice, a Warhammer 40K narrative event located in Spruce Grove, and that's all I know.
All right, there's our upcoming events. Now we'll sign off. So another episode of Hobby Night in Canada. I'm Steve.
My name's Ward.
Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And as always, paint your damn models!